Welcome to All Sides with Anna Stanford. Ohio is full of fascinating people, and today we're going to meet three of them. A cafe manager who collaborates with women-owned businesses to serve coffee and treats while supporting women of color. A state forester who tracks Ohio's stunning fall foliage, even in challenging weather conditions. And a business owner who not only runs a gluten-free bakery, she co-owns a burger spot and a cafe that provides second chances through workforce development. We're going to begin our conversation with fascinating Ohioans with Megan Smith, the manager of the Purple Door Cafe. Megan, welcome to All Sides.
Hi, thank you for having me.
First question is the obvious one. Why is it called the Purple Door Cafe, outside of the fact that the door is quite literally purple?
Yeah, it was just a nod to the original door at the original Zora's house over on Summit. We wanted to encompass things from the original into the new permanent building.
The cafe is part of Zora's house, which was named after a writer and anthropologist named Zora Neale Hurston. How did you come to be a part of Zora's house?
I came to be a part of them. I found the job posting on Indeed. I connected with Letha Pooh, who was our administrator. She helped set up the Purple Door.
And if the name Zora Neale Hurston sounds familiar, it's because one of her most popular works is the novel Their Eyes Were Watching God, published in 1937, and it's required reading in many schools today. So if Zora's name sounds familiar, that's why. But before we get further into the Purple Door Cafe, I want to learn a little bit more about Zora's house. And for that, I'm going to quickly bring on Zora House founder and CEO, Elsie Johnson. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, thank you so much for having me this morning.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. So how did Zora's house come about?
Sure. I'd love to tell you a little bit more, but before we jump too into it, a common mispronunciation is Zora. It's actually Zora Neale Hurston.
Ah.
It is common because she has the E at the end, but it's Zora Neale Hurston. So Zora's House is the first and only co-working space, leadership incubator, and nonprofit organization in the state of Ohio, and one of the very few in the country whose mission is to ensure that women of color and gender expansive people of color have all of the skills, all of the space, and all of the really strategic supportive connections, including mentorship, sponsorship relationships, and just strategic connections that they need to thrive in work and life. So that's really what our mission is. And in 2015, we purchased a vacant lot in the Wyland Park neighborhood of Columbus, built an actual house with a purple door, and we opened the first Zora's House. It was 2,000 square foot. And over the last 5 years when we were in that space, we ended up seeing over 5,000 women of color, and allies who came to us for our programming and our community.
Yeah, you guys have a small library and reading room, co-working areas, rentable offices, communal space. I mean, it's got a lot of stuff inside the house.
There is a lot. And you're actually referencing our brand new location that just
yes.
opened. So that's our 10,000 square foot, our permanent location that has all those things. And one of the biggest changes to Zora's house was that we really wanted to open up a cafe that could be open to the community. Zora Neale Hurston in her writing often talked about the front porch. She's from the South, as am I. And the front porch and the meaning that it has in neighborhoods and community. And for us, we really wanted there to be a cafe, a front porch to Zora's house that invited our neighbors in and was able to extend our mission of supporting women and women of color.
And Megan, that's your job now, to oversee and manage the cafe. What's that been like?
Oh, it's been incredible. We went from, you know, grassroots, ground opening. Our business has increased. We're seeing more of the neighborhood come in, which is awesome.
You also source coffee beans that are roasted by women. like the Columbus Coffee Roaster and tea purveyor Fruits and Roots. Your baked goods come from women-owned businesses.
We're partnered with Bake Me Happy, which is Letha Pugh and her wife, Wendy Miller Pugh. We get our gluten-free Krispies. They custom-made purple Krispies just for us.
Elsie, how important was it to you that every part of the Purple Door support women and women-owned businesses?
I mean, it was really integral when we thought about what we wanted to do with that space. Of course, we were thinking about how can we invite the community and our neighbors into the space and make it feel, like home for them as well. We talk about Zora's House. But our mission is to really support women and women of color. And so it was really important for us to use our expanded platform to increase awareness about some of the incredible women of color who own food product businesses, not just restaurant owners, but those who make artisan drinks and who bake pastries and really use our platform to help our community learn more about them. Hopefully when people become fans of the Purple Door, they then go on to become fans of those women-owned businesses as well.
Megan, even the coffee cups are locally made by Tiffany Smith. Can you describe these coffee cups? They sound pretty cool.
Oh, they're amazing. The artwork for each mug is individual. There's no two alike. The artwork is incredible.
And it's made by Tiffany Smith. She's also known locally for custom handmade African-inspired jewelry and accessories.
She is. Her line is amazing.
Yes. And I will just say, Tiffany is, her line is very unapologetically inspired by the African diaspora. And so her coffee mugs are, each one is really inspired, not just by the idea, but really rooted in African coffee and tea traditions. And that also was a very intentional and incredible partnership, because she doesn't make her work typically is either sold or featured in museums. She does not do it for retail. So it was a very special collaboration that she allowed for her work to be used in that way to kind of increase the mission of the Purple Door.
Oh my gosh, you got to be so careful washing them, I assume.
Very careful.
Yes, absolutely. Hand wash only.
Oh gosh, I'd be so scared. Now if I come, I'm going to like carefully baby the mug as I walk to a table.
Do not drop the mug.
Absolutely.
Do not drop the mug. To everyone listening, just don't drop the mug. You guys should come. Just don't drop the mug.
But it does sound like it's possible if you fall in love with the mugs, you can go and find Tiffany online and purchase some of them, or purchase a mug or something that she makes.
Purchase from work, absolutely.
Yeah. What has been your favorite part of managing the cafe, Megan?
Oh, the connections. Everybody has been incredible. I've met so many wonderful ladies. It's just been so inspiring.
Elsie, has Zora's House helped launch any businesses that we might know about, or maybe ones that we don't quite yet know about?
Well, one of the things that we do is try to make sure, again, that we are supporting women-owned businesses. And many of the way that Zora's House often does that is by being the first to carry somebody or being somebody's first contract. One of the challenges that women, and especially women of color, actually have in growing their businesses is that they tend to have less cash, which means they're not always able to get the same types of accounts to get that first type of, I'm going to get carried in this grocery store. I'm going to get carried here. And so with Zora's House and the Purple Door, part of the work that we really want to do is be the first one to take a chance and say, oh, you guys have never been carried anywhere in retail before. And so let us be your first retail account, because with us, you're going to get a lot more grace. If you mess up your wholesale pricing, if something happens and, you have a sick kid and all of a sudden, like, you've never managed that in your business with a wholesale client, that we're going to be here and have grace for those experiences and coach them through those experiences, so that when they're done a year from now, you're going to start seeing them in other locations, because they will have had the opportunity to be at the Purple Door first and to learn and to continue to grow.
I love that. Are you guys planning anything around the holidays, helping people find access to some of these items if they're looking for gifts?
We actually, on December 14th, so mark your calendar, we have a Women of Color owned market, that holiday market that we do every year. It's one of our favorite events. We'll have some soulful Christmas music playing. The Purple Door will be open and featuring a number of new holiday drinks. And we'll have 20 to 30 women of color owned businesses actually vending in our space. It's so fun. We have activities for kids. And everybody who comes always jokes that they spend way more money than they need to. But we have everything from jewelry to handbags to candles. It's just a really fun experience and an opportunity for folks who aren't as familiar with women-owned businesses or women of color-owned businesses to meet 30 incredible vendors at one time and get amazing drinks at the Purple Door.
What I love about that is so often, and it's, I guess, a lot of times when you go to sometimes these Christmas markets, there are a lot of resellers, like people who wholesale buy stuff and resell. And
absolutely.
That's fine, but sometimes that's not at all what I'm looking for.
Yeah, none of that. This is specifically for artisans and crafters. And so you're really getting, if you're buying a leather handbag, it's from the person who made it. If you're buying a luxury candle, you're looking at the person who poured it. And we really have some unique artisans in Ohio. And it's really incredible to be able to showcase women of color, because also at many of these markets, when you look around, they're not very diverse. And that was really the need that we saw, is that, okay, we're not seeing a lot of women of color at these markets. So for us to be able to highlight women of color owned vendors is just a really special opportunity.
Megan, I have a difficult question for you. What is your favorite drink? What is your favorite food item on the menu at the Purple Door?
Oh, my favorite drink would have to be the Zora's drink. It is a caramel vanilla cheesecake latte.
Oh, my goodness.
You can get it either hot or iced. And we do a house-made whipped cream on top with the caramel drizzle.
What about baked goods, or what's like a, if you're going to snack on something?
Oh, my favorite baked good would have to be the crispy treat from Bake Me Happy.
Hmm, that's really cool. And it's purple.
Yeah, there's purple sprinkles and glitter inside of the crispy treat.
Edible
and it's
glitter.
Gluten-free. Yes, absolutely.
That actually sounds really good. Elsie, do you have a favorite drink at the Purple Door?
Well, my secret that's not about to be very secret is that I don't actually drink coffee.
Oh.
The staff literally teases me all the time, but there is a drink that they have gotten me. It's actually called the Elsie 2.0 because it's something I actually
drink. Yes, ma'am.
And it is a blueberry lemonade. And it's like a unique blend of like a blueberry lemonade with a cold brew topper. It is so good. It sounds weird, but it is delicious. It is very refreshing. And I love that. And then the Purple Crispy is mine. Or I also love, we partner with a Three Bites Bakery, which is like a Filipina-owned bakery.
Oh, yeah.
And they have some really delicious Filipina-inspired tastiness. But there's literally always something delicious there to eat, unfortunately for me.
So is that on the menu, or can I go in and be like, I'd like the LC 2.0?
You can go in and ask for it. Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
We'd love to serve you.
No, it sounds like such a fun space. I definitely have to come for the Maker's Market. I'm always looking for like local handmade gifts for friends and family.
So, amazing. December 14th.
Yeah, I'll mark my calendar.
Great.
Elsie Johnson, CEO and founder of Zora's House, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you all so much. I appreciate it.
And Megan Smith, the manager of their Purple Door Cafe, thank you so much.
Absolutely. We appreciate your time.
I'll be in for that crispy and an Elsie 2.0 soon.
Look forward to it.
Coming up, we're talking about the best places to see Ohio's fall colors and the man who studies them. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. We'll be right back. the candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staper. Fall is in full swing. Halloween decorations are out, the shoe is filled on Saturday, and the leaves are changing. Our next guest has found a humorous way to keep people updated on fall's fantastic fireworks through short, pun-filled videos. His name is David Perreault, and he's the fall color forester from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Welcome to All Sides, David.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I want to start by playing one of your fall color videos featured on the ODNR website. We're going to hear first from your colleague, Josiah Wade. And just to set the scene, since we're playing audio of a video, you're in colonial garb.
David, I have no idea what this getup has to do with fall color.
Outside, hanging out. On a limb, we are branching. That is why we're buds. Huh? Huh?
What are you talking about?
Well, Josiah, since we're here at the Haiku Trail ribbon cutting, I thought I'd dress the part and maybe give a couple tree haikus. But let's talk about the impact of the rain on the fall colors, because I know that's what the people are rooting for.
So lots of good dad humor in that clip. How do you decide what you're going to do for these videos?
So we actually have a couple people that work with me, me and Josiah. There's Jason Fallon and Mario Hensley. And the four of us generally just come up with different locations and activities that people can do throughout Ohio, or if there's any special parks that are being open. And we try to find kind of a humorous angle to highlight those areas, as well as the fall colors and what's changing in the area.
So fall color forester, that is a heck of a title. How did you get it and what exactly do you do?
So there's a lot of weight that comes with this position, because if the fall colors are not good in a particular year, I tend to be the one that gets the blame for some reason. But I was a forester down in Southern Ohio at Shawnee State Forest for about 8 years. I moved up to a communication role. And this is a program, as far as reporting on the fall colors, that's been going on for decades through different media. Now we do videos that are posted on social media and YouTube. And I just got to be the lucky person that got picked to do it. And then, so what I do is I just kind of keep an eye on different models and predictions of what the fall color season is going to have before fall. And then once fall starts, I just get to be the one that reports what our field reporters are seeing throughout the state, so people can have an idea of where to travel to if they're wanting to see fall colors in their peak.
If we want to go out this weekend and see some fall colors, where are we going?
So right now is the time, because pretty much, which is a relatively an odd situation, and most of the time this doesn't happen, but the whole state is pretty much a peak color at the same time this year.
Oh,
so that is pretty odd. Usually it kind of goes through phases from the north to the south, but this year it's statewide. So
around the state road trip.
That's right. If you want to travel the whole state, you can see the fall colors all throughout.
Does that have anything to do with the drought that we had from summer into fall?
So the drought definitely had an impact, and we have been pleasantly surprised, because about a month or so ago during the drought, we were very worried that that was going to have a very negative impact, but it's actually turned out to be okay. The drought actually showed we had a lot of areas that had a bunch of tree species turn in way earlier than they typically would in the southern and central part of the state. So we were kind of worried that they were all going to change real early, real fast and fall off, but we were able to get that rain. And that kind of helped the leaves move along, and now we're kind of back on our typical schedule.
The Hocking State Forest Fall Color Tour is this Saturday, October 26th. It's an annual event. It's got wagon rides, professional foresters will be on hand. What types of things do you get to learn about?
So One, you get to see the fall colors. Two, we have different demonstrations like chainsaw safety. You can see how a portable wood mill or lumber mill works. We have refreshments like bean soup and cobbler, as well as you do, if you take the wagon ride for a short period of time, you will have a personal forester who can talk about anything forestry related as you take a hay ride around into the forest.
I have a difficult question for you. What is your favorite kind of tree to watch change color?
So that is kind of tough, but I will say that I have to admit that sugar maples are probably the best species for fall color here in Ohio. And I only say that because they run the full gamut of colors. So they can be yellow, orange, red, purple, any color. And sometimes even within the same tree, you can get that whole myriad of colors within the same actual individual tree or even in an individual leaf. So that's a pretty cool tree, is it, when it comes to fall colors.
If I wanted to see a bunch of sugar maples, where am I going?
Typically sugar maples you can find anywhere throughout the state. Pretty much anywhere in central Ohio or north, anywhere actually. A lot of times sugar maples, probably for the reason they're such good fall colors, can be found in a lot of urban areas. That's a very popular tree. They grow good and they give good fall color.
Also this weekend, you can visit the Conkles Hollow State Nature Preserve. There'll be naturalists stationed along the hiking trail to answer questions. Sounds like you guys are getting all out this weekend for the peak color.
That's right. Those two events work really well together. They're actually side by side. So if you visit one, there's a little tiny trail that connects the nature preserve to the state forest, and you can visit both of them. So you can get a little bit of, you can take a hayride or a wagon ride, learn about forestry, and then you can hop on the trail and do a little bit of hiking if you want. And then also to note that there's a lower gorge trail there at Conkles Hollow that is paved, so it's accessible to just about anybody.
If I'm busy this weekend, how long do we have left to see the changing trees?
I would recommend getting out as soon as you can, because we've kind of hit that point where we're starting to get into cooler evenings. And once we start hitting below freezing, that's going to cause leaves to start falling faster. And then as the winds pick up, it's going to blow a lot more of those leaves off. So right now is the time to strike. The iron's hot right now in terms of fall colors.
Gotcha. So don't put it off.
Correct.
Can I ask a science question? Why do some trees turn red, orange, gold? I guess, why does the sugar maple do all three?
So a lot of it has to do with the genetics of the trees. And they actually, so a lot of those urban trees have actually been cultivated for specific fall colors. But just in general, the reason we see the different colors, a lot of it has to do with the weather can influence that. So a lot of the reds and purples come from a pigment that isn't in the leaf until we start getting sunny days and cooler evenings. And that's what causes those red or the dark reds and the purples to kind of pop out. So a lot of that is actually weather driven. So this year in particular, we saw quite a bit of yellow trees or yellow leaves. And that's primarily due to the fact that we were experiencing that drought. And then that stress was causing those trees to turn early.
Oh my goodness. So the color that they are can also depend on the water and the soil and the rain and the year that we're having.
That is correct.
Oh, that's really cool. So does a bunch of yellow mean like, oh my gosh, we're in trouble?
Well, not necessarily. It's just, so the way it works is the reason those leaves are green throughout the year is due to chlorophyll being in the leaf. And the pigments that produce the oranges and the yellows are actually already in the leaf throughout the year. It's just overshadowed by that green. So if a tree starts to get stressed, it might decide, oh, now's the time to go dormant. And it stops producing that chlorophyll. And as it pulls that away, we start to see those yellows and oranges. So it just kind of depends on if the tree decides to start turning before we start getting into that cooler, more typical fall weather, we'll probably see more of those yellows and oranges.
Your videos on ODNR's website, in addition to being funny, also have facts that aren't tree related. You talk about marine fossils and exposed rocks. So if you're not completely into trees, you've got a lot of fun information about different hikes and what you can see.
That's correct. So As a department, the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, we have a bunch of different divisions that cover all of the natural areas and natural features of Ohio. So we try to highlight each one of those in our videos so it's not just specifically towards, although I would might prefer it because I'm with Division of Forestry, but it's not a strictly only about trees and forestry.
I have a little bit of a selfish question to ask you. So I used to live in Colorado and I love aspens, and we always used to go up in the mountains and see the aspens. We planted aspens in our backyard. If I really love that kind of like bright flickering leaf, is there any place to get something like that here in Ohio?
So here in southeastern Ohio, we actually do have a species of aspen that grows. So it's called bigtooth aspen. You can find those. Generally, they're in kind of younger forest is usually where they show up, usually where there's been disturbance. So you can find those. If you're in the right spots, usually kind of areas that are of higher elevation, kind of in the hills.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look into that more. I love that sort of like that like quaking circular leaf. I think they're really beautiful when they change color. Mm-hmm. What is the best way to, or like how can we learn about what we're looking at, particularly when we're on a trail in Ohio? Because sometimes, you know, I have kids and they'll be like, what's that tree? What's that tree? And I'm like, I don't know.
So if you want to learn more about forestry, just in general, you can visit the DNR's website, and that has information about all things nature related. If you own personal property and you wanted to know like what's on your property and maybe what to do if you owned woods, we actually have a service forestry program, which like you mentioned before, you can have a personal forester come out to your property. They can walk your woods, tell you what to do, and kind of help get you into programs. So
does that cost anything?
No. So that is a service. So if you were to go to our website, you can find the service forester for your area and give them a call and schedule an appointment. And so we recommend that anyone with woodlands do that, just even if you don't necessarily want to grow timber or anything like that, but you just want to have a healthy forest, because healthy forests aren't just good for you, but the forest on your property is benefiting everybody else as well. So there's definitely motivation to help everyone keep healthy forests.
Yeah, although I will say in the suburbs, sometimes there's motivation to round up as many nuts as possible and get them out of your yard.
Yeah, for sure.
What are some of your favorite places to hike in Ohio this time of year?
So if you're into backpacking, there's a couple options. So Zaleski State Forest has a backpack trail, and Shawnee State Forest has a backpack trail. And those have primitive campsites along the way. Shawnee's is about 40 miles, depending on how you want to take the loops. So if you're into the more extended hiking, those are the ones I would recommend. Depending on the area, Alums Creek State Park is always a great place to go if you're in the Columbus area. If you're in the Cleveland area, there's Mohican State Forest that's nearby. And then, now you mentioned you were from Colorado, so this might be of interest to you. Is there's actually Triangle Lake Bog State Nature Preserve that's near Cleveland. And what's unique about that area is they actually have tamaracks that grow there, which are also found out west. And so if you're not familiar, tamaracks are a deciduous conifer, and they turn a golden color in the fall. So they're really cool to see, and that's one of the few places you can see them here in Ohio.
Oh, that's awesome. I know it's not you guys, but there's also Cuyahoga National Forest there. Beautiful, lots of great acreage.
Right.
But I know that's not a place that you all manage. It's been a bit warmer this fall, but we are, this whole week, right? It's been 75, 78. We're just finally starting to dip. How much does temperature in the daytime really play a role in this color change?
So really, it's going to come down to moisture level. So if you get to where it's hotter and that's causing it to be low humidities to where the leaves will dry out, that can kind of have a negative impact if it's too much. So the leaves might dry out. But as far as temperature, we kind of mentioned before, what we really want is the sun is good for the colors, and then having the cool evenings is really a key to make the colors pop.
Are all the state parks having events this weekend, or is it just Conkle's Hollow and Hocking Hills?
So those are the two main ones that are going to be going on. But if anyone is interested, if they go to the Ohio Department of Natural Resource website, we have a calendar of events because there's over 100 state parks, and then we have 24 state forests and nature preserves. There's always something going on somewhere in the state if anyone is interested.
So too many to name right here, right?
That's correct.
What's the website?
So our website is, if you just, the easiest way is probably just to search for ODNR in a search engine. But if you go to ohiodnr.gov, that'll take you to our main page.
Some of these weekend events include tree trivia. So I'm curious, can you share a little bit of tree trivia with us right now?
So some of the tree trivia is going to be just simple tree ID. You look at a picture, see if you can decipher what kind of species you're looking at. And now our tree trivia covers more than just trees. So we actually have some Smoky Bear history questions, some questions about the state forest, and then some just general tree trivia, such as, I if you'd like, I can give you maybe a question you might see on something like that.
Yeah, you can quiz me. See if I
so,
know.
In the book, A Tree Grows in Brooklyn.
Oh, I've read
do
this.
Do you know the species of tree that is referenced in that title?
I do not.
I'll admit, that is one of our harder questions. But the answer is actually kind of funny. The answer is Tree of Heaven is the tree that's referenced, which is actually an invasive species that is a problem here in Ohio.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't even know there was a tree called Tree of Heaven.
Oh, so yeah, Tree of Heaven, it's not a native species. It's actually from Asia. It's here now, and it's kind of a problem because it outcompetes our native species. So if you were to contact your service forester and you had Tree of Heaven, that'd be something they would identify and try to help you get rid of that to make your woodland more healthy.
We have a small smattering of woods in our backyard, and we had invasive honeysuckle. And that is a beast to try and get rid of.
It's a never-ending battle when it comes to trying to remove invasive species. You got to be very dedicated.
How did Tree of Heaven end up in Ohio or in Brooklyn?
So a lot of these are either brought over for ornamentals. People thought they'd look good in someone's yard. Some of them, like bush honeysuckle, was actually thought to be a good erosion control. So that was brought over. It was planted everywhere. And then over time, we've learned that, oh, no, this is a problem. It's well, and Calorie pear, which was just recently identified or distinguished as an invasive species just recently here in Ohio, that's another one. It was planted as an ornamental. And then over time, we've realized it's a real problem.
Huh. Any other fun facts before I let you go?
Something I would like to mention to as everyone gets out into nature and enjoying the fall colors, this is also our fire season. So right now through from now until December is our fire season. So any dry, windy days, no matter what time of the day it is or night, just be careful when dealing with any fires, and just know that there's no open burning allowed between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. until December. So we encourage everyone to get out, have a good time, but what we don't want to do is cause any wildfires that us or a local fire department is going to have to get called out to deal with.
Oh my goodness. No, as somebody who used to live out west, like even putting a cigarette out in the wrong place can start a forest fire.
It's always something, well, not always, but a lot of times it's something that no one ever thought. Just be cognizant whenever you're burning anything.
That was David Parrott of the Ohio Department of Natural Resources. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, what it means to bake me happy. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald
Trump's type.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Letha Pugh is passionate about food, about championing the local restaurant industry and lifting others up. She started Bake Me Happy 11 years ago to revolutionize the way others view gluten-free baked goods, making tempting and tasty treats for all palates. She also co-owns Preston's Burgers in Clintonville and co-founded Cafe Overlook in the Franklin County Courthouse. It's a workforce development program partnering with people who have recently been incarcerated or impacted by the system. Tying it all together is her nonprofit work with Service, a relief for hospitality workers, started as a lifeline during the pandemic. And she may or may not have some other ventures in the works. Welcome to All Sides, Letha.
Thank you. I have been trying to get in this chair for the last 11 years, so this is really exciting.
I'm so glad that you're here. Yes. So let's start with Bake Me Happy.
Okay.
You started it more than a decade ago. Why did you want to start a gluten-free bakery?
Well, just so that, you know, there's peace in my household, I own Bake Me Happy with my wife, Wendy. We've been together for 18 and a half years, and Wendy is intolerant of gluten. And so it kind of came to life from that. I was looking for another, I'd sold a home care business, was looking for something else to do. She was baking for people privately, and then from there, Bake Me Happy was born.
Yeah, especially when it comes to gluten-free. I mean, the world of gluten-free options has exploded in the last decade, but a lot of it sometimes comes down to texture, to taste. It's a whole different ballgame. As somebody who's like dipped her toe in it for friends and family, it's like trying to make the texture of a cake like taste right. That's not easy.
You know, in the beginning, I said a lot of gluten-free tastes like cardboard. I had a lot of respect for people who would come in and they say, I've been gluten-free for 30 years. And I think, what were you eating? You know, I think Wendy and the team, because that is Wendy's area. She is the artist in the bakery. Her and her team together, they have really worked hard to have a product that mouthfeel is important.
Oh, yeah.
Mouthfeel is a thing. But we don't use any, we didn't invent any of the ingredients. So, you know, you know, the rice flour, the white rice, brown rice, potato starch, all that, they figured out how to,
the right blend.
The right blends for different products. So it all, you know, it's all important.
Yeah. And do you have a favorite item at Bake Me Happy?
Ooh, that is a good question. You know, we just had Nostalgic Treat Day, so we do like throwbacks, which exposes the younger kids to things they may never have been able to try.
I love that.
We get a lot of kids in from nationwide that are referred to us because they're celiac. And I like a good nutty bar. I'm not a huge sweets person. I don't like icing on my cupcakes, things like that. So the King Dong is probably one of my favorites.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So you have another, you co-own Preston's Burgers. How did you get into a burger joint?
Oh, that's a good question. So I went through the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses program right before the pandemic. And during our class, we learned how to increase our revenue streams. And one of the projects or dreams I had was to partner up with a mainstream restaurant. So when I talked with Matt, and at the time Matt and Katie Randazzo had Preston's out of a food truck, we got together. I bring kind of a gluten-free component to, so we do about 30% gluten-free Preston's. You can get gluten-free tenders, fries, you can get gluten-free burger, chicken sandwich. So, you know, the two of us together have been able to build this business out that, you know, it's an amazing burger. People can eat there safely. You know, honestly, Preston's just kind of dropped in my lap. And I am like, we are like super, super grateful to be connected to it.
Then you opened a restaurant in the Franklin County Courthouse. And this one is different because it partners
with people who are getting out of prison.
Yes. So Cafe Overlook is... Honestly, Cafe Overlook was the brainchild of the Franklin County Commissioners. We had started the service nonprofit during the pandemic. A lot of folks in the restaurant industry weren't eligible for unemployment. So we started doing meals. We were doing cash grants. The commissioners approached us about taking over this cafe that they had closed during the pandemic. And it has... You know, it is probably one of the most beautiful things that I've been involved with. We do work with folks, recently, released from prison. We work with people transitioning off of public assistance. We work with people who walk in off the street and say, hey, I have an interest in food. I'd like to get some further education because it's about the education.
Yeah.
But we also do quite a bit of barrier removal. So we help with transportation, uniforms, childcare. We work in conjunction with Job and Family Services. The project, we are seeing and reaping the benefits of the project. Folks leave Cafe Overlook and we place them out into restaurant and hospitality jobs in the community.
Yeah, that's what I found so fascinating about it is not only do you say you pay a living wage and health insurance, but you help with the childcare, the transportation, the job coaching. It really sounds like it is, rather than retaining long-term employees, it almost sounds like it's a springboard to whatever they're going to do next.
You know, being able to provide services to get folks to the next level, you know, there are a lot of workforce development projects out there, and they each have their niche that you know, makes them successful. But the food industry is one of those industries where everybody works together. You have an executive chef, line cooks, dishwashers. Everyone works during service to put out a meal for people to enjoy. And so we've really put a lot of love and energy into Cafe Overlook. Just because we know that there are these talented folks out there who they just need a little bit extra. And if we can give them a little bit extra, we'll get a whole lot more out of them. So
I have another venture that you're just getting into with the Upper Arlington City Council about opening something called Core Cafe.
Yeah, so Core Cafe, I've been working with the Upper Arlington City, the city of Upper Arlington, for the last probably 9 months. We will open a small cafe, grab and go. We'll do smoothies, coffee, drinks. I'm excited about it. I think that, you know, the vendors that I'm working with for the grab and go meals will add a little extra flavor to the area. There's a senior citizen or a senior housing development across the street. I'm hoping that they will, you know, come over and patronize as well. But, you know, we'll have healthy food, drinks, coffee. It is.
What's the timetable for it?
I am going to take over the space in January and we will open in April.
Awesome.
It's coming soon.
Leads me to my next question. Uh-huh. When do you sleep?
You know what? If there was anything that I felt that kind of suffers because I have so many irons in the fire, I'm not like as social as I used to be. But I get into bed every night about 10 o'clock.
Oh, that's not bad.
But I probably work every day.
Yeah.
You know, it's a trade-off. I love what I do. Every day is different, you know. I sit and talk with folks. Sometimes my day is just talking with people, meeting with people. Sometimes my day is 8-9 hours in front of the computer. But it's a good balance for me. I've always been a hard worker, so I have no complaints. I'm also unemployable at this point. So I need to be out here working for myself.
Bake Me Happy is also expanded. So you have the original site on the south side of Columbus, and then you have another spot at Bridge Park in Dublin.
Yeah, so we bought the building on the south side. It was an old post office. We renovated it. It's about 4,100 square feet. It seems very small when you walk in, but we have a crew of about 10 bakers that you don't see kind of tucked around the corner. The opportunity for Dublin, it was an easy decision. It allowed us to have a footprint in that part of the city. Dublin has been amazing, super supportive. And, you know, there are a lot of folks in that on that side of town who also need gluten-free. And that's the thing, you know, we have people who come in because we have people who come in because they support the mission. We have people who come in because they support it because it's a Black-owned business. We have people who come in because it's, you know, owned by two women or, you know, all the things. But at the core of Bake Me Happy, we have people who can't eat anywhere else. And, you know, those are the folks that, you know, when your dog gets tired at the end of the day and they come in and they say, I've been coming here since you opened, or I literally can't eat anywhere else. That is what keeps you going. So, you know, it's our baby. We'll keep babying it along.
Who knows? Maybe you'll open a location near me in Delaware someday.
That's a possibility.
I'll keep you apprised.
I think there's a gluten-free shop up there.
There is, and she's fantastic.
Yeah. I keep there's not a lot. There's a shop in Bexley. There's a shop in Delaware. I keep my eyes on folks. I wish everybody the best. It's more than enough for all of us out here.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, we love what we do, and I love being able to expand out, and I love giving people gluten-free and they don't know it's gluten-free. So
yeah, I think that's kind of cool sometimes.
Yeah.
You also have something called a unicorn bar, which I'll admit I'm curious. What is a unicorn bar?
Well, the unicorn bar is a collaborative product we have with Mikey's Late Night Slice. And so Wendy put her special, the unicorn bar and the Rice Krispie Treat. If you've not had those two items from Bake Me Happy, you need to grab them.
Okay.
They are one of those things that you break off of it and then you keep breaking off of it until it's gone. And I think it is, you know, I think it's the brown butter. I think it's a little bit of love. I mean, it is Bake Me Happy. So, you know, I tell them sometimes, hey, you guys, you can't be in here baking sad. You gotta be happy in here baking and
oh, yeah.
And putting
once
that
I
out
switched
in the world.
Once I switched to brown butter for, like, cookies, you can't go back.
It changes everything.
Oh, it's so much better.
Yes.
If you take nothing away from this conversation, brown butter for your baked goods.
A little bit of salt sprinkled on doesn't hurt either.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be just the right touch, though.
You also had an interesting interview with CNBC on problems with access to capital. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you've overcome it?
You know, I wouldn't say that I've overcome it. I think that just having been in business for so long, I've just gotten real savvy with it, a lot more savvy with it. It is tough out here for startups, new folks, and we need startups. We need new folks. We need innovation. But it hasn't always been the easiest getting access to the funds you need. I remember having a conversation with a guy It was for a startup, and he said, well, why'd you use your own money? And I said, I didn't have an option. you know, I have to figure this out, and, you know.
That was the money I had.
That was the money I had, and I was doing the best with what I had. So I think there's been a lot of effort put into access to capital for small businesses, but I think at the end of the day, the technical support on the front end has allowed me, you know, I have a file on my computer that is all loan paperwork. And when folks ask me, you know, send A, B, C, D, E, F, G, I'm able to send them the information that they need. That has taken time to get to that place. I remember scrambling around trying to pull finances together or trying to pull together paperwork. You know, I think if a business can survive for a couple years, you will get to a place where getting access to capital comes a little bit easier. But it is not easy. It is still not easy. And, you know, grant money, I have people asking me about grant money all the time. Grant money is pretty much non-existent. And so it is, you are relying on trying to access loans without, you know, a track record, a financial track record, but you have a good product. And to get a better product, you need to have branding and a logo. And so, you know, it's tough out here, but there are some folks who persevered and been able to you know, put the pieces together and you know, build successful businesses.
We have just about a minute left, so Bake Me Happy. I assume we can find you on Instagram and
yes.
on the website.
Bake Me Happy, Preston's a Burger Joint, Cafe Overlook. We are all on Instagram. Core Cafe. We'll get all that set up here soon. But yes, I will tell you, the city of Columbus is amazing. They've been supportive. Wendy and I, Matt and I, we're all very appreciative.
That was Letha Pugh, the co-owner of Bake Me Happy, Preston's Burgers, and Overlook Cafe, and
yes.
many more to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day.
And thank you for listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.